Planning for retirement is not one of the sexier aspects to investing, but it certainly is critical. This week on Techonomics, host Jason Middleton gets an economic and investment report card from a wealth manager and financial analyst. Planning ahead, diversifying, and hedging your financial bets. That's now on Techonomics.
It's almost too easy to put off saving for retirement, right? I mean, there's a vacation, it's such a great deal, or something more mundane like orthodontics for the kids. For my money, financial planners have their work cut out for them when it comes to convincing clients what the clients already know is in their best interest. They just don't take action. I've spoken to so many financial advisors, and I swear you can almost hear them slump in their chair when they say, as they should, it's better to start early when it comes to planning retirement. And they're so right. Slow and steady over decades is going to win that race. And when you factor in that we're all living longer, that retirement plan has to stretch further and further. Here's part two of my chat with a wealth management advisor and retirement planning expert, George Nocetti. George is with Morgan Stanley in Walnut Creek, California. We rejoin the conversation with me drilling into George's assertion that not only is diversifying a portfolio important, but it's also key to keep an eye on Japan. Why do you seem so bullish on Japan right now?
Japan has reduced a lot of their debt. They have stimulated their own economy. Now we're seeing the Japanese stock market move forward based on that. We're seeing better earnings from the Japanese companies. And that's been a drag in our portfolios if you were diversified in the past. And now we're starting to see that, you know, actually move up. So we like Japan now.
Okay. Now, back to the baby boomer question. From where you sit, I'm sure you're advising a lot of couples or a lot of people who are coming towards the end of their paycheck cycles, and maybe they're looking for something else to do or maybe hopefully retire. Again, in a macro kind of sense, what are you seeing and feeling? Is there angst within that demographic?
Well, I think when people are in their 60s, they realize that, oh, I only have a few years left in my work life, and so I have to be planning. Well, you know, it's better late than never, but that is a little bit late. You see individuals moving into age 65, and all of a sudden they are retired. And the question is, really, in their minds, will they have enough money to last them the rest of their lives? And the difference now is that our lives are, you know, we're living longer. We're living into our mid-80s. Women live about 3 or 4 years longer. So baby boomers are really asking the question, do I have enough money to last me the rest of my life? And if I do, what's the effect of perhaps needing long-term care? Because there's a probability of about 47% that any individual will need some form of long-term care, which is incredibly expensive also. So all those factors have to be considered into answering the question, you know, do I have enough money to last me the rest of my life?
Right. We have another friend of the show on sometimes, John Tarnoff, and he wrote a book about the boomer reinvention. And are you having to advise clients, you're going to have to stay at work for another 5 years?
Yeah, well, we just do the numbers, and the numbers tell us that if you want to spend more money, we have to put more money away, and then we have to monitor, you know, how much we're spending every year, given that we might live another 20 or 30 years. So we have, you know, some of the baby boomers who have been incredibly talented and great, and they're just tired of doing the same job over and over again. We tell them, look, you have a lot of transferable skills. You could do something else. You don't have to work full-time. You could work part-time. Any money that you bring in takes a lot of pressure off of the money that we have to draw from the portfolio. And that's why we encourage people also to delay in taking their Social Security, because we call Social Security income longevity. And the longer you can delay, the more money you can get. And the money that you're going to get is going to increase by the cost of living, because Social Security has a COLA associated with it also. So over a long term, if somebody's getting $2,000 or $3,000 a month from Social Security, it can end up being $4,000 or $5,000 a month, just the cost of living and delaying taking Social Security till we're older, if people can do that.
That's a good note on Social Security. It kind of reminds me, a former network I used to work for had one to grow on. That's one to retire on, I think, right there, George. I'm going to make some music for that jingle for you, okay?
I like that. I think we can play that all day. People should really listen to that song.
George Nocetti, thank you so much for your time this morning. Always a pleasure.
Jason, enjoy talking to you. Thank you very much.
That's George Nocetti. He's a wealth management advisor at Morgan Stanley in Walnut Creek, California. If you're listening on the podcast, that was part two of two, so please search kgoradio.com/techonomics if you want further free financial advice from George. Let's stay with the financial theme for the rest of this segment. There are plenty of leaves in the wind, economically speaking. especially when you consider that this is the season when usually traders take off for their homes in the Hamptons. Very dull summer season. Next up, we have a senior economist at Wells Capital to give us some macroeconomic report cards. Right now is my chat with Gary Schlossberg. He's a senior economist at Wells Capital Management. We're going to start off with the very strong housing report we got, where the median home value across the United States is at an all-time high of $200,000.
We're not seeing the kind of explosive, broad-based increases we saw 10 years ago. We're seeing, you know, pockets of real strength, increases that are a bit more subdued in the interior. Along the two coasts, of course, things are red hot, if not white hot. Although, as you may know, here in the Bay Area, there are signs of some cooling, maybe going from white to red. But the fundamentals are still driving it. Low mortgage rates, affordability still strong, despite the fact that home prices are high and the increases have been quite rapid. Consumer sentiment, job market confidence has improved enough. Demographics, the millennials are hitting that point where they want to start forming families. We are starting to see evidence of a move out of rentals and into home ownership.
Okay, good temperature check on the housing market. Of course, the other leg on the stool for the American economy is consumer sentiment and consumer spending. Let's get a report card on what you see there.
Well, consumer spending generally, I think, is holding up well. We are starting to see signs of fatigue in the auto industry. The actual level of sales is quite high, but still quite high by historic standards, but it has been coming off over the past couple of months, despite increasingly aggressive incentives by some of the auto manufacturers, auto industry. But away from that, we have reasonably good income growth, despite the fact that wage increases have been modest. Average weekly earnings have been going up at a good clip because the work week and employment have been rising. And of course, inflation stays subdued, and that's the other part of that purchasing power equation.
Part of the theme of this week's show has been that we're kind of in a Goldilocks position when it comes to at least Wall Street,
right,
not necessarily Main Street. So you kind of reinforce that. The last thing I want to ask you about is Chair Janet Yellen, Fed Chair Janet Yellen's quote unquote final testimony. That's still up in the air. Of course, she might be renominated. What was your takeaway from that testimony in July?
Well, in July, I think it was something of a damn the torpedoes and full speed ahead at the time. The economic numbers were softening up a bit. They'd been something of a disappointment over the past couple of months. More importantly, we're seeing very little sign that inflation is picking up. And while we do expect to see inflation moving up over the next several months, growth is stronger, the dollar is weaker, so we do expect to see goods prices moving up. I would have expected her to be a bit more guarded, but the Fed really is determined to bring interest rates back in line with growth and inflation. At this point, I think it's baked in the cake that the Fed is at least going to announce its intention to wind down its balance sheet at the September FOMC meeting.
Let's circle back real quick on the balance sheet you mentioned there. So if they start to unravel some of that balance sheet, which I believe is around $4 trillion, and let's say they announce it in September, what kind of a ripple effect could that have on an already kind of trenchant bond market right now?
They're going to start by allowing $10 billion of Treasury and mortgage backs, split between $6 billion of Treasuries, $4 billion of mortgage-backed securities to run off. And each quarter, they're going to up it by that so that you get to that $50 billion figure and leveling out. It has an increasingly perceptible effect on the market. I think the bigger effect up front is just investors knowing that the Fed's allowing their portfolio to run off. So it can have a perceptible effect across all maturities, but particularly longer dated maturities, because there are just simply fewer of them out there. It's a thinner market. And then on the flip side, the supply of Treasury securities is already growing because our deficit is widening, which is very unusual late in an economic growth cycle. But because tax revenues aren't coming in as expected, when you put all that together, what the Fed's doing in the context of everything else, that could nudge interest rates up, particularly longer-dated rates, over the next 12 to 18 months.
Gary Schlossberg, thank you so much for your time and your expertise. Always a pleasure.
Thank you. Thanks for having me along.
That was Gary Schlossberg, senior economist at Wells Capital Management. Let's end with Fed Chair Janet Yellen. She gave what could be her final testimony on Capitol Hill. Her tenure is up in February if she's not renominated by President Trump. And that's no slam dunk by any stretch. On the campaign trail, he said several things about Chair Yellen. Here are some clips.
And we have a Fed that's doing political things. This Janet Yellen of the Fed, The Fed is doing political by keeping the interest rates at this level. Big, fat, ugly bubble.
She's done nothing. But I would want to have a policy where we can start to at least gently reduce debt. We can get things under control, because right now it's not under control. What happens if interest rates go up, you know, fairly substantially? Everybody's figuring these crazy low interest rates. Well, they're not always going to be this way because of market and market competition. And what's going to happen when interest rates go up? And they could go up. Hey, I was there with Jimmy Carter, where interest rates, I think the prime rate went to 21 or 22%. So, you know, you think that can never happen again. It's like the baseball players, you know, they have a good season and then they go out and they live like they're going to have their season for the rest of their lives, and it doesn't work out that way. That's what we're doing. We're living like we're going to have no interest rate, because we're paying almost no interest. That's, you know, the numbers are so low. Now, she's keeping them artificially low to get Obama retired. Watch what's going to happen afterwards. It's a very serious problem. And I think it's very political. I think she's very political. And to a certain extent, I think she should be ashamed of herself.
Now elected, Trump has a different view of Yellen and her interest rate policies. This is from Bloomberg Markets.
Markets had assumed Trump would not be reappointing Janet Yellen when her term expires in February. Now, has he changed his mind on that one as well?
Well, I guess she's not toast, Rich, not even close to it. That's a key point. And let's just put this in perspective, because Donald Trump was very critical of the Fed, led by Janet Yellen on the campaign trail, keeping policy too easy, potentially devaluing the dollar, etc. At any rate, we know Janet Yellen has to step down in February of 2018. If the president doesn't reappoint her as Fed chair, the vice chair, Stan Fisher, his term is also due to end next year. But now we're hearing from Donald Trump in this Wall Street Journal interview when asked, as I said, he likes Janet Yellen, he respects her, and he likes the current regime of low interest rates. Not surprising, when you're on the campaign trail, it's one thing to look at the situation under the previous administration. Now he's the one in charge of the economy. Probably he's starting to appreciate a Fed chair who is cautious about this whole policy of normalization.
Now, what I could have written right there was exactly the same, but you can hear why I chose that clip, right? I mean, that guy's pipes. Okay, for this and other segments, check out our podcast page at kgoradio.com/techonomics. Coming up after the break, expensive advice for free from startup experts and proven marketers. That's next on Techonomics. I'm Jason Middleton. Please come on back.